Hello, and welcome to another exciting episode of the Co-Opticast. This is episode 119, the Beanie Cast, joined by the magnificent Locke Vincent, who is summoning the powers of the Beanie with his own two hands.
Hello, everybody.
Yeah, I don't know what he's doing over there either.
Wizard shit, man!
Oh, just wait until the next episode of the Co-Opticast. I got a special present in store for that one.
The I'm a fucking sorcerer episode.
Exactly. And that, of course, those dulcet tones you'll recognize as Mr. Mike Katsafrakis with his emo gloveless mittens.
They're giant robots crushing a city in glove form.
Yeah, like
sweet.
I said, emo mittens. And of
my
course,
wife made those for me, you son of a bitch.
I am. So over there we have Mr. Nick Paleo.
Here I am, over
the
here.
Stoic one.
There he is, ladies and gentlemen.
There he is, and I, of course, am Jason Love, and we are here to talk to you about some co-op games and some co-op news, but not too much of either necessarily, but we'll talk about that in a little bit. Nick, why don't you kick us off? What have you been playing?
I finally finished up Skyrim this past weekend, so that was... That was good, though. I think I got to go back and play through some of the DLC. Yeah, it took
me... So 100 hours later.
Yeah.
Nick, you already have a child. You don't need to adopt a virtual one.
I want the Dragon Rider. I have the Dragon Rider one, so I want to play around with that, see what that's like. So, yeah, it ended up being about 21 hours to beat. And that's straight main quest only. I barely did any side quest stuff.
Nice.
So it is a meaty game. I had some company this weekend, and we played some hot seat co-op Battlefield 4. We basically just switched rounds for about 5 hours straight. So I'm pretty
nice.
Pretty deep into that again. And other than that, checking out a new game called Blackguards. It is a tactical RPG. Mike and I were kind of talking about it a little bit before the show. It is what's the quote from the PR thing? Probably the bleakest story ever told.
How bleak is it?
Probably the bleakest.
Well, I can tell you from about the hour or so I've played of it, I've seen bleaker. But, you know, I'm not far enough into the game to make it a 100% call there. I'm just saying it's
just
not
before
as
your
bleak
first cup of coffee in the morning.
Believe.
It looks pretty bleak.
Yeah. So I'm about 2 hours in, and you know, if you like Heroes of Might and Magic, it's kind of similar to that. It's kind of Baldur's Gate-ish. It's kind of like a mix of those two. There's a ton of spells and maneuvers and upgrades, and it's just layers after layers of stuff. And I'm sure I didn't even scratch the surface. But I think the one cool thing that it does that I really think is unique is the environments that you fight in are interactive. So like early on, one of the tutorials shows you can actually like cut the cord of a chandelier and drop it on enemies. Later on, there's like things you can knock over, you can hide behind things. One of the battles I was in, actually, there was like these like sewer kind of great things, and you had to cover them up or enemies would keep coming out of them. So it does some neat things there. It's incredibly difficult, though. And I even picked it gives you an option when you start, and I picked the normal one, and I'm still having a hard time only like 2 hours in. So, it's pretty cool. Kind of came out of nowhere, and I'm on a little bit of an RPG kick with Skyrim and now that. So, and then other than that, I've just been messing around with Unity, still trying to learn my way through that and mess around with some game development stuff. So,
can you tell me how Blackguards is like Heroes of Might and Magic?
So you got your kind of your grid, your hexagon battle,
so like the battle, right? The battle system. Okay.
Yep, and it's turn based. You know, basically your positionings on the guys and stuff give you certain bonuses and stuff like that. The overall world too. It's not like you wander and stuff. There are specific paths you can go along and towns and specific areas where you'll hit on. So it doesn't have the more strategy, the overworld-oriented kind of stuff like Heroes of Might and Magic has. you know, where you're building your army necessarily. Right. It's just a party of guys. But like I said, the battle system is pretty similar.
And is it story driven or is it sandbox where
no,
you're
it's very story driven. Okay, it's and gotcha. It's very right, linear too actually so okay. far.
Cool.
But yeah, I like it. It's a little different. I like that you can actually pick up and kind of jump right into the battles a lot quicker than you can in a typical RPG. Like, it's really focused on those battles. Yeah. So it's a little bit different. But cool. Yeah, that's been about it. Not too much.
Sweet.
So, talking about not being able to jump into battles too quickly in an RPG, Locke, what have you been playing?
Well, played Divinity OS. Not, yeah, that's Divinity. Sweet.
Who's
Divinity Original Sin, and Jason and I rocked this for what, like 3 or 4 hours over the weekend together.
Yeah.
We also had some time alone with it previous to that. And this is from Larian Studios, if I'm correct.
Correct.
And they make some serious RPGs. But Divinity Original Sin, it's interesting. It's a co-op RPG. You got the isometric view, and you're walking around, you are talking to people, you talk to more people, then you go and you find some stuff, and you talk to some more people, and you keep talking to people, and you are walking around this town that I mentioned was the size of Baldur's Gate. And in Baldur's Gate 2, you basically spent half the game in this city. Divinity Original Sin, I don't think we've left the city other than, like, the first 5 minutes where you spawn in, and we managed to get into a battle after about 4 hours and finally fight something. And we had to run away because we were like level 2 and they were level 5. But yeah, it's a little slow going. Mind you, this game is still in alpha. But it's interesting because the biggest aspect of it, I think, that's really cool is the ability to converse within the party. And if you're playing co-op, Jason can pick different dialogue options than what I pick with my character, and that will affect your charisma stats, basically. You have different things like intimidation or charming and stuff like that, and those actually, you can build your skills based on sort of how you interact with characters, both between the two characters and between NPCs. And then Jason, the two characters, I hopped into your game, but you can, there's two characters and three classes, right? Can you do that?
Yeah.
You can, like, switch between, a ranger, warrior, and a wizard?
Yep, and then you can also gain additional allies along the way that others, so eventually you could make it a four-player game and have others join you.
And it's cool because you're not tethered to each other unless you are, like, warping to a different area, so you can kind of wander around the town separately. When one person gets into a fight, they are actually in the fight, and I don't know what it was like on your perspective, Jason, but when we fought that sort of undead horde that had been taken over in that house, I was still exploring while you were fighting, and then when I came out of the house, then I hopped into the fight. Did you have to wait for me to fight?
So it was interesting. I wanted to fight. First started, like, I saw that you were off and you were kind of running around doing your own thing, and I, of course, had the action grid and everything, and you weren't present in that. Like, it kind of shows you the portraits along the top, and then when you ran in close, all of a sudden you were part of the fight, and therefore, you know, like, you gave your own turn in the battle and everything like that.
Yeah, no, it's interesting, and it's definitely like a straight-up RPG, dialogue trees. And, I'm looking forward to seeing where it goes, because right now, I mean, the biggest thing, we just didn't get enough action, and the stuff that we found, the monsters that we found were just too powerful, and there was nothing to sort of, there was no level one rats to help, you know, boost what we're doing, but, Yeah, I don't know. What do you think, man? How did you've played a little bit more than I have? What do you think of this?
It's one of those games that, I mean, and I'm sure once they've put a little bit more into it and probably even had a chance to maybe have something of a tutorial or something like that to it.
Totally.
That you feel tossed into, and if you have background with, you know, Locke mentioned Baldur's Gate or any of those kinds of third-person RPGs, even remind me of Ultima.
Yes.
And totally. And like, what was that, Ultima 7 or whatever we were running around. But if you have experience with those and you kind of get what's going on, you can kind of pick it up quickly. But there's a lot where, you know, as Locke mentioned, you're used to some tropes like, where's the level 1 rats for me to just go fight and level up some so I can go and kill the level 5 zombie boar before the level 5 zombie boar comes and kills me. But there's also a feeling that maybe there's equipment in town or something like that that you should be going and buying, and pretty much the only way to buy it is to go and steal everything that's not nailed down so you can barter for it.
But the thing too, the first mission, the main quest line you're on, you have to like rob people and like investigate their like belongings in their house in order to progress the quest line, and I found that a little weird because that's not something you normally do. And again, I'm sure this will change as the game sort of develops further, but it was just funny being like, okay, I'll distract them, Jason. You go dig through their like bedroom and find the letter. Wow. Letter so we can prove that they murdered this guy. But
it pretty much was. I was like, okay, go talk to her. I'm going to go sneak in and break all of her stuff.
Yeah, pretty much. So, and you can pick up everything, like anything that isn't nailed down, you can pick up. I'm talking pillows, cutlery, furniture,
barrels,
so, paintings. So,
I'm just gonna go and say that if it's not a Dwemer bowl, I don't care.
I don't think exactly they have any of those just yet.
Because that's the ultimate pickup, right? Is Dwemer stuff because it's heavy as crap, bogs you down.
But so we're gonna have a preview on that, and I mean, there's no rush to get into this game right now. Again, it still has a lot of work to be done, but you know, start to build the hype a little bit and get people's eyes on it. But no, I don't think there's a reason to sort of freak out about anything just yet.
No.
Because it is quite slow going, but I'm looking forward to seeing sort of, you know, the beta build of it and something a little more full and polished. Not even polished, like, I mean, the game plays really well. It's just like that sort of content that needs to be there to progress you in an RPG. I mean, I'm okay not just holding your hand the whole time, but there needs to be some natural progression. You can't just, like, those fights that we have to run away from every time, those shouldn't be happening, that sort of thing.
Yeah, there's a little bit of a gap missing there that just kind of feels, you know, like, you feel like when you first drop into it, even though it's the first, I'm guessing it'll end up being the first area or something, you feel like you missed some portion of the game prior to
that.
Yeah, so cool. Well, anything else aside from that?
What's the date on that one?
What's the release date?
Yeah. Do they have it?
Very good question.
Confirmed it?
Next year.
I think so.
If it's an alpha state now, it's probably not till late if it's this year.
I'm doing a quick fact check. Release date. Oh, this is early access. That doesn't help me. We'll double check that, but yeah.
So it's already out.
It's already out. You can play it. You can purchase this for $40 and play it.
I think it's been TBD for some, like, ever since they first announced that they weren't ever really sure exactly when.
Yeah, I mean, the co-op things they're doing for an RPG are actually really cool. And then hopefully just the rest of the game sort of just keeps chugging along.
Co-op conversation is kind of an interesting thing to tackle. And the first game I played with it, I can remember, was the Old Republic MMO.
Yeah.
And that just did dice rolls on
who gets
whenever there was a conversation point.
And it's basically the same thing in the background here. So, like, you know, if you get to a branching dialogue path, right? So, like, there's two different viewpoints between the two characters for this one option choice, like. You want to, you know, one character wants to join up with this group. The other character says, no, I'm not going to do it. Both characters then have a chance to convince the other person to take their side. And it uses, like, intimidate, charm, reason. And these are all just roles happening in the background. You know, you go through, like, one or two of those, though, for each character. And then eventually whoever made the first choice, it's just like, we're just going with this.
Yeah.
So, you know, it does kind of time you out from it. But, it is interesting the way they can kind of try to have the two sides sort of interact with everything.
Yeah, very curious to see where that goes. Other than that, Starbound got patched. I believe this is the last one. No more wipes. I think.
Goodness.
So yeah, I'm actually going to try. And so more Starbound. Looking forward to that. I usually stream it, you know, a couple times a week. I haven't discovered anything new. I only played for a couple hours last night, and basically had it.
nothing to see good. Here.
Got to the point of where I left off before the wipe, where you can. It's that the sort of the tutorial quest line where it's like, here's how to make, you know, an anvil, and here's how to make a beacon and that sort of thing. So, looking forward to
home
exploring the galaxy. You lost it?
Yeah. Like, wow. I had my home planet all marked, and I think now it's all gone, so I have to. I mean, like, I have all the progression for the quests, but all the stuff I had accumulated there is gone, and I have to, like, start over again. It's kind of sad. But it's cool, because I still have, like, all the stuff that I pulled off from the monkey castle that I invaded.
You mean Mike's house?
I tore down everything in that place. Like, monkey posters, there's this weird interrogation chair that's now my main dining room.
I'm surprised you didn't squat there.
Did you find my sex dungeon?
Exactly. With the thing that says "Obey Big Ape," yep.
That's terrible. That wasn't mine.
someone snuck in and put it there. And then finally, I'm doing a last Dark Souls run on PC. Final one. No more after this. Putting a bow on it before Dark Souls 2.
Yeah, I got to prep for DS2.
So, yeah, cool. Playing through that with. Cub Ninja, and we're just being dumb in it, so it's awesome.
Nice.
That's all.
Well, how about you, Mr. Mike?
Yes.
What you been playing?
Oh, let's see.
Big Ape.
I spun Diablo 3 back up because I really wanted to get some of my other characters finished off because I'm going to play the expansion.
Yeah.
So, let's not talk about that. I also play Blackguards. Well, I mean, what's there to say about Diablo? You click on stuff and it explodes, and you pick things up and make a number go up. Thanks.
Video games.
Video
games, in a nutshell.
And there's the co-opted cast.
No, so I played a little bit of Blackguards, which actually, once Nick was talking about it, I was reminded that we hadn't done a podcast in since around Christmas time, so the things that I'm going to talk about are Broken Age and the Banner Saga.
Oh.
Because both of those came out, and it's a regular Kickstarter explosion around these parts. Broken Age is the first half. What's available right now is the first half of the full game. Anybody who backed it got it. It comes out tomorrow for people who want to purchase it on Steam, and if you buy it, you get the second half of the game as a patch later on. It's basically like a automatic season pass, and it's real dang good. I haven't beaten it yet because life takes precedence around these parts, but it's pretty sweet. The art style is beautiful. It's actually really funny when it wants to be, and I think it's probably one of the best adventure games I've played since the ye olde times when adventure games were common. It's a little on the easy side. There's not, like, you can, like, before in the old games you would kind of have to brute force your way through stuff every now and then, and just because of the playing an adventure game is like half figuring out a logical puzzle and half figuring out how to reverse engineer the messed up logic in the game designer's head.
To make a fake mustache.
Let's not talk about that. But it's pretty stripped down. That, like, there's not a lot of item combination. Like, you'll have an inventory and it'll usually be pretty obvious where to use it. It's pretty much a one-click interface. It's very obvious that it's going to be easy to for the iOS and Android ports that are coming later on to work out really well, but it's the writing's really sharp, the voice acting is great, and it's funny, and it looks great, so it's got basically all the check marks you'd want out of both a Double Fine game and a game that Tim Schafer worked on. Speaking of beautiful games, the Banner Saga.
Disney.
Holy shit, guys, that is one of the best looking games I have ever seen. That is, whoever their art director is, just sat there and looked at the background art in every Disney movie from like 1950 to 1970 and said, I'm going to make a video game that looks like this. And
I love it.
It does. It looks absolutely phenomenal. It's interesting because it's half grid-based tactical RPG like a Final Fantasy Tactics or something, and then it's half dialogue tree based story progression. So you'll have your merry band of adventuring giants and humans, and they're off on their quest to not die. And they're roving around, and you come across cities, and you'll be basically given a series of decisions to make that can lead to battles, or, you know, like the deaths of a party member, or, you know, different people to recruit. And it's real. Like, the production values on it are just astounding. The only thing that really betrays its Kickstarter / indie origin is the fact that there's almost no voice acting in the whole thing. Like, everything is really just kind of... Like, you've got this 2014 presentation, and then it feels like... Sometimes it feels like you're playing an Infinity Engine game in the 90s. With all... Like, because everything is just, like, text boxes.
Yeah.
And, so that's really great. It's a good tactical game. It's got a couple issues that I don't like, in that there is a there's kind of a set order that you need to defeat enemies as you roll through it, because there's a priority or a initiative system, so everyone attacks in a certain order, and the order goes the same every turn. But once you've reduced the enemies army down to a certain size, it becomes like one constant turn, and everyone's kind of moving around out of order, and a lot of the characters you can have are like these big lumbering giants, and they're not very mobile, and you'll end up fighting against like you left the archer because you don't move very fast, and he's sitting at the very edge of the map. And so, like, the last couple turns of the game are, I'm going to take a whole bunch of damage chasing this guy down when I have clearly won. And so there's a little bit of weirdness with that. And if you take care of the more mobile guys early on, it goes away, but not all the fights end up working out that way. So sometimes you're like, I really want this fight to be over, please. He can't beat me.
But he can try.
But it's pretty cool. There's a couple parallel storylines. You kind of jump between two sets of main characters, and I really dig it. If you like strategy RPGs, tactical RPGs, definitely check it out. And I just, like, half the time I sit there playing that game, I'm just gobsmacked looking at the detail in the art. So,
it's kind of drooling.
Yeah, like, well, I feel like, as an artist, I feel really insecure and terrible right now, because I'm looking at something that is not going to come around very often. So
yeah,
that's pretty great, and nice. I suggest you play it before King.com takes their name away from them.
Oh. And becomes the Banner thing.
Banner Sega.
The Banner Saga Frontier.
Yeah.
It's just, call it something slightly different. Tread on a different trademark.
Cool. Nice. So yeah. I've been playing some Divinity Original Sin with Locke, and we kind of covered that. The only other thing is the Warframe on PS4 finally got the 11.5 update that the PC got back in middle of December. So it's going through, it's got the new Oberon Warframe, and it also has the Cicero Crisis event that PC players already went through. It's the first event with that game that I've ever done, and it's pretty interesting the way it kind of works out. It's a grind like the rest of that game, but you know, you go around on this one planet and you scan for plant life in order to make these antitoxins, and then when you get up enough of those materials to make the antitoxin, you go back to the same board, and it goes from like a exterminate mission where you're killing a set number of guys to a defense mission, and so you have to defend this one point until the antitoxin builds up. It was a lot of fun to do with my friend from college I play it with, because he and I kind of went into it just like, you know, we think we got this. Like, we got a good frame combination between the two of us and good guns. So we think we can cover this. And it was a really close fight. I mean, like, we got down to, like, the last 10%, and we were just basically, like, bunkering down around this point and hoping that we could just bide time long enough for the last 10% to go. And we made it. And it was probably one of the more fun moments I've had in that game for a little while. The defense missions are really good. So, yeah, I've been playing some of that, and hoping to check out some of the Banner Saga and Broken Age and all that other kind of stuff sometime soon.
Yeah, and if you want to watch us all flail around wildly and suck at Warframe, we did a... We did a stream of that last week. It's on the site.
It's so good.
Yeah, that the last thing we did when like, wait, we're doing okay, and we're dead
and pear shaped.
What just happened?
Yeah. Jason, would you say that they're doing a good job at rolling out content for Warframe?
So, definitely for the PC version.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, as a whole, yes. And for the PC version, it's a lot easier because they don't have to go through any sort of
verification
process,
yeah.
You know, stuff like that they do with Sony. So, I mean, that stuff gets pushed live. They've done a great job of, like, since July, they've introduced 3 new tile sets. The Cicero Crisis introduces a 4th that they're trying to implement soon. They've added, I think, 2 Warframes since July, maybe 3.
Nice.
So they've really slowly started to expand the amount of content that's there, and they've tweaked some of the things that definitely needed tweaking. So, I mean, at this point, with the hours I put into the PS4 version, I've got enough, you know, different mods I can add to my guns that even if I get, like, a base gun that I don't have any ranks in, you know, I can take it on a mission with me, with a buddy, and or even with a random group of guys, run through that mission, get a few levels into it so I can equip just 1 or 2 mods, which makes it strong enough that I can kind of, you know, help build it up more.
Nice.
So it's kind of like, you know, once you put in, and I hit just, I think, yesterday the 10-hour mark on that game for the PS4 version, so it's not even like, in the grand scheme, I don't think I've put a ton amount of time into it.
Right.
So, I mean, you know, it's been worth it. It's been a lot of fun to just something to quick pick up and play. You know, and they definitely have done a good job of keeping people interested in playing it and offering stuff to kind of keep coming back.
Yeah.
So.
Right on.
Cool. So with that, we're going to talk about some of the news that's been kind of going on for the past few weeks. And Mike, I know this is a game that you've kind of expressed some interest in. What can you tell me about Plants vs. Zombies?
Plants vs. Zombies Garden Warfare, you mean?
Oh, my apologies, yes. Plants vs. Zombies Garden Warfare.
The Xbox One exclusive, or short-term exclusive, squad-based horde mode shooter, Plants vs. Zombies.
Something like
well,
that.
Well, it was originally supposed to come out on the 18th of February, and it got pushed back by a week, so... You know, all of everybody that has a Xbox One jonesing for something to play and are, you know, really hoping that they get in the Titanfall beta that's coming out soon, they'll just have to wait another week. And, you know, Garden Warfare, it's class-based. It's basically Horde mode and Plants vs. Zombies. Looks pretty sweet. They have you know, a lot of the character roles that you'd expect, like the Sunflower can heal people, and I do like the name of the Future Cactus. That is a pretty excellent character. That's an excellent character class name. I guess it's a timed exclusive on the Xbox, so hopefully it'll come to the PS4 and PC in the future. But yeah.
So in that week's delay, while we were looking for something to play on the Xbox One, you can hop back onto the Xbox 360 or maybe your PlayStation 3 and get your nice fill of, say it with me now,
EDF! EDF!
EDF, yeah, there we go.
Earth Defense Force 2025 coming out February 18th on the PlayStation 3 and Xbox 360. I mean, you know, if you played any of the other Earth Defense Force games, you know what you get into. Killing a bunch of giant-sized aliens.
That's a term covers a broad range of things.
Yes.
Whether it be bugs, robots, or intergalactic species.
Or foreigners to a country. I mean, you know, they're just like...
Sure,
you can go anywhere with that. But in this case, they happen to be bugs. And you can level cities, and they've got different classes that you can play as. So apparently if you purchase it with, like, there's a DLC for 5 new missions called the Special Ops DLC. That's going to get released separately, or you can buy it with it with the game and get that right from the get-go. So,
yeah, playing that at E3 was fun. And the might have been the best meeting because the person showing it to us... They were straight from the Japan studio, and it was really... The language barrier made things interesting, but when we were playing it together, we knew what was going on, and you had to kill the big things. So, EDF, bring in cultures together.
Nothing brings cultures together like removing the physics from gigantic spiders.
Exactly.
And launching them into the stratosphere with a shotgun.
Very true. Very true. There's that to look forward to. Now, a little bit of sad co-op news, I hear. Mr. Nick Paleo from the Dead Rising front.
Yes, Dead Rising 3. There's 4 pieces of DLC coming. The first, Operation Broken Eagle, hit last week. But we got the poor excuse of... We wanted to focus on the single-player experience, so there's no co-op in this. Now, if you
haven't... Isn't the co-op in Dead Rising a clone of the same character?
In Dead... Well,
like
in Dead Rising 3, they actually tried to make the character a little bit different. Like, it's one of the characters...
Give him a mustache?
Well, it's one of the characters from the story that you play as in co-op. But more or less, like, it doesn't matter. It doesn't affect... the story in this. It's just open world goofiness with zombies. So why they would remove that ability for the DLC to say that they're focusing on the single player stuff is just...
It's because no machine could handle 2 evil Mandy Patinkins at the same time.
Could be.
It's just too much.
It's true. Nobody could.
Not even PC Master Race.
Everyone's father would be killed.
Exactly.
So, yeah, it's really a bummer because the co-op in Dead Rising 3 is one of its strong points. I mean, they even put in co-op vehicles and stuff like that, so...
Yeah, it doesn't make a lot of sense.
No, it really doesn't.
From what I saw, the DLC is you're playing a generic soldier dude in an entire helicopter full of generic soldier dudes. So they could just get one of the other character models... and apply that to player 2, like, and call it good.
Yeah, like, unless they change the way the game is structured in the DLC, I haven't played it, then maybe. But if it follows the same formula as a single player, there's absolutely no reason to limit it.
Hmm. Weird.
Yeah.
So, well, it goes from the downside of a game that should have co-op throughout its DLC to now the upside of things of... Well, what could make Payday even better? How about Payday in space?
Put it in space?
Yeah.
Yes.
Hello.
Go on.
Intergalactic bounty heisters. Let's talk about this for 1 minute.
Okay.
Starbreeze is working on something, and they want to basically, they've called the project Payday in Space. That's the formal term. And yeah, we're talking.
I'm going to allow this.
We are talking about, you know, heisting against intergalactic police forces using your anti-gravity boots and your plasma pistols and rifles, but not a ton of details, but that was announced or found out that that's going to happen. So the one thing that I want to see, because we did see such a large jump of features from Payday 1 to Payday 2, hopefully we could see less grinding maybe in Payday Space Cop. I don't know what they're calling it, but codename Storm. They've been tossing that around, but I would like to see a little less grinding, a little more refinement on the loot system. Really, that game's so good, and they could just keep doing what they're doing, and a good sci-fi shooter could do us well.
Refinement of the difficulty, too, so that, you know, if you were to pair up with a couple of AI partners, you wouldn't just watch them run into walls.
Have you paid much attention to this new, the Infamy system that they just launched?
It's the high tier stuff. You basically have to be max level to access it.
And then, like, if I read it correctly, you basically trade in everything you have to get one point of Infamy or something like that.
You get some really cool stuff.
Okay.
I don't know if it's the same as prestiging, because I wasn't able to do it, but I looked at, you can go in and view what you can get, and it's like, obviously, a super cool mask and equipment and something else, but
it looked like the Killzone mask.
There was a Killzone mask in
okay,
there.
Okay, like, so I wasn't just, like, hallucinating.
No, there's like four exclusive Infamy masks that you can get. So, but I don't know if you lose everything, because I wasn't able to do it. I'm only like level 40, so
You have to be 100.
Yeah, you have to be 100, which takes quite a bit. Again, going back to the grinding thing for me, you know, life and stuff. Payday in Space could be cool. Really, really curious to see what happens with this. So
a Chewbacca mask. That's what I need,
dude. Don't even get me started.
I would die if they made a Han and Chewie intergalactic smuggling game.
Anything that resembles Privateer, I am cool with.
And then Vin Diesel just shows up to be Riddick for no reason.
Sure. Why not?
Sure, him in. Get him in there.
give Chewie an eye shine.
Yeah, that's right. Couple of quick things. So, interesting news kind of coming out today is that Microsoft has bought the Gears franchise, and it's now in development, the next game within that overall franchise is being developed by, Black Tusk, there we go. I was going to say Black Vault, I was like, no, that's not right. Black Tusk Studios, which used to be Microsoft Vancouver, is that right?
Yeah, I think so.
So,
also the name of a pretty kick-ass sludge metal band.
Yeah, that's the only thing I could remember. I was like, Black Tusk. I was like, aren't they a metal band?
Yes.
Everyone's branching out these days. Kind of along with that, then someone familiar, I guess, for Gears fans would be Rod Ferguson.
Yes.
So yeah, he was
he's back.
So Epic for a while. Actually, his credentials go. He was at Microsoft for like 10 years, left there, was at Epic for like 6 or 7 years. And then he actually went to Irrational and was there when they shipped BioShock Infinite. And then he I can't remember if he left to form his own studio or he left to join something else, but that never panned out, and now he's back at Microsoft. So, but he was basically head of, you know, besides Cliff Bleszinski there, he was basically head of all the Gear stuff at Epic. Oversaw development of it.
Do we really...
No. Is the answer Gears is no.
What are you looking at with your hand there? Do we really know what this is on my hand?
No, I'm just saying, is Gears a franchise that needs to come back for next gen? I don't know about you guys, but I feel like Gears really ran its course with just the trilogy.
With Maria.
And the People Can Fly developed follow-up Judgment didn't really seem to sit right with a lot of people, so...
Yeah.
I don't know. It's kind of like Halo 4 didn't feel like... It didn't grab me like the Bungie-developed Halo games. And I feel like Gears is going to be the same way. It's like, if the original creative team isn't making it, I'm kind of not interested.
Microsoft is really squandering for their franchise for this generation. Like, if you think about the past, like, Xbox was Halo. Xbox 360 was Gears. And now, what's their big name franchise that's gonna drive the console?
NFL.
Yeah, Titanfall.
Yeah. So we have one of our listeners, Nathan Britt, suggested Titanfall. And I guess
I'd say Titanfall's up there. Iron, what else do you have to choose from? Project Spark.
Yeah, I mean they haven't really announced all that much. So yeah, I guess Titanfall. I mean they did pay for exclusivity on Titanfall stuff. Not only for this game, but future games. It'll still be co-published with EA, but I mean, I guess they were co-publishing essentially with Epic for Gears. So
I mean, that game's also going to be on the PC. So
yeah,
I mean, it's not as if it's a platform exclusive to the.
But Gears was too. Gears came out on PC. Not all of them, but some of them.
Yeah.
Halo 1 and 2 also came out on PC. Yeah. And, well. Well,
we all know how that went.
Demo for Halo 1 was pretty rad.
Yeah, the first time I played a Halo game actually was on PC. So.
Apparently, Halo 2 still has a pretty big player base on PC.
Because it's the only place you can play online multiplayer for it.
That's so weird, people.
A lot of people have like modded it, and it's pretty popular still.
So weird.
I don't know. I still play Quake World from time to time.
That's different, though, man.
It's a very, very old multiplayer game. I don't know.
I still watch
Quake is a much better multiplayer game than any Halo, and I'll fight anybody who says otherwise. But, you know, some people like to hold on to the past.
I still watch Paint Dry from time to time. You know, it's...
Such a jerk. Such a dork.
So from what is Xbox/Microsoft's franchise or what's going to help them kind of push a lot of their consoles or be the name tied to the console to, let's talk a little bit about Nintendo and, how they are failing to push their console.
Iwata is about, two shitty quarters away from committing seppuku in front of the board of directors.
There might not be another option.
I mean, Nintendo.
What
have
they got
Nintendo's,
coming?
They're having a really interesting situation where they totally fucked up with the Wii U. I love the crap out of my Wii U. I think it's great. I think almost every game coming out for it is great. But they had the problems with messaging when they launched that system were so bad that people are still confused about like what that system is, and their ad campaigns are not doing anything to sway anybody. Mm. And it's a real shame. And on the other hand, they have the 3DS, which is, you know, software sales are kind of weird on it because people pirate the crap out of DS games and stuff to play on it.
Right.
But the 3DS is selling really well. I mean, the 3DS sold more than, like, I think in the winter quarter, the 3DS was the top-selling game platform out of everything. So, like, their console future is way up in the air, and a lot of people are saying, well, Nintendo needs to jump to iOS and Android, which I feel is kind of missing the point of what Nintendo does.
Yeah.
You know, there's some rumors that came out today that they're going to make, like, adver games for iOS to try and, like, hook you on something and then point you back to a Nintendo platform, which could be interesting. I mean, the Pokemon Company put out a bunch of iOS and Android.
Wait, Nintendo is the master of the microtransaction on the macro level, selling colors for all of their stuff over and over again and everything. I mean, that's all they've done with everything. The Pokemon stuff, the different color systems. I mean, they've been doing it for years. And that's what all of the free-to-play stuff, you know, is making their money on. If anybody should be good at it, they should be, right?
Well, the thing is, Nintendo, as at its core, has kind of this fundamental... Either they don't desire to engage online the same way that everybody else does, or they just have a fundamental misunderstanding of what people like out of online, and they have this... They're in a weird spot where, out of all of the platform holders, they are the ones who are expected to be, like, the gatekeeper of the well-being of the children. And a lot of the decisions they make as far as online go. Like, I don't know if you guys ever randomly decided to check out, like Free Realms or any of the other random, like, kiddie-based MMOs or online games out there. Yeah. But those things are gated all to hell, and they feel really weird and backwards because they're so stripped down. And it feels like Nintendo goes after that when they deal with online. I mean, to the point where, you know, they had the, what was it, not the Picto chat, but the swap note feature on 3DS, and then a bunch of people started, like, passing around, like, pornographic material using it, and they just shut it all down and replaced it with Miiverse, where people ask each other out creepily and talk about their parents beating them. So I'm not really sure. Like, if you've seen some of the crap coming out of Miiverse, it's real weird. But a lot of people think that they should make a complete jump to iOS. And, you know, that seems to be the obvious skate where the puck is going solution. But I don't feel like Nintendo belongs in that area. I think they would stop making games before they make games for someone else's platform. I don't know. It's real weird. I don't know what the path forward is. They're supposed to have a shareholder update on the 30th. So that's Thursday.
I think their problem is they rely too much on their core franchises and on the nostalgia factor.
Yeah.
And as time is getting older, the people that have that nostalgia factor, they're just kind of losing interest, or they just don't have the time for it, or whatever. And what was it? There was a statement that was it Iwata had made that, like, we hope that people that play Nintendo growing up start having kids soon, so...
They can get their kids well, right?
And it's a good point, because... I look at my house, like, my daughter, like, we play all sorts of games on iOS, on the computer, and all the other platforms, and the games that Jay latches onto immediately are all the Nintendo ones.
Right.
Like, there is, like, they still, like, to people who have played Mario, like, I forget where I heard this, and someone put it so well, it's like, for us, Mario Kart 8 is the eighth Mario Kart game they played, but for somebody, it's their first one.
Yeah.
And it goes back to the Final Fantasy argument. There's so many people who are like, Final Fantasy VII is the greatest game ever. And it was just the first one they played, and it's the one they have nostalgia for. And Nintendo is kind of like, they aim at that market of kids that would play together, and it's, you know, their platform isn't as pervasive as it was, but, I mean, especially now, I'm seeing 3DSs everywhere, even with all the iOS gaming people do.
The problem.
So, it's still... They're still hitting with the market that they want to hit. It's just the world is changing, and they don't want to change enough.
Well, and the problem with hitting the nostalgia market is there was... it was Bare Naked Ladies, I think, at one point, was doing, like, some commentary and something, and they're just like, you know, it's great when you put out all these greatest hit albums, and people are like, oh, yeah, I love this song, and I remember this, but it's always disheartening for people to say, I really loved your first record best. Like, you don't want to be that caught up in nostalgia to be, the NES or the Super NES was a great console. What have you done since then? I mean, like, that's just not the position you want to be in. I mean, and it's great, if I had my Nintendo or Super Nintendo hooked up and I had a kid, like, absolutely, I'd have them playing those games because that's nostalgia. The modern stuff, probably not so much. I mean, like, once it got more to the modern stuff, it'd be more towards the, you know, 360 or the PlayStation 4 or something.
I disagree
because the first Mario game that my daughter saw was Mario, the one for the Wii U, the new Super Mario Brothers Wii. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the games that she goes back to because that's like the first one she saw, and it's the big bright colorful graphics that are, you know, they, you know, they look nicer, and it's like, to us who have played it all before, it's like you don't have the nostalgia for it, and sometimes you feel like you play it out of duty. But like I said, you know, the first exposure is the one they're going to latch onto, unless it was, you know, clearly a bad game or something.
I think that the biggest delta that Nintendo has versus what they had, you know, in the late 80s and 90s is, it seems kids today grow up faster. And they latch on to the rest of the market that's out there. And I think there's a more mature gaming market, whether it's, you know, Call of Duty or whatever. You know, I'm using my point of reference to this is my 10-year-old nephew. And, yeah, you know, he had a DS and he played a few Nintendo games back in the day. But now it's, you know, at 10, he doesn't even really care about the Nintendo stuff. It's all about Halo and Call of Duty and you know, those kind of things.
I think play there's Rayman, just a, damn it!
There's just a bigger market. There's a bigger market and there's more distractions. And I think what made Nintendo so great now, like, it doesn't stand out like it used to. Like, sure, it definitely holds the younger kids' attention. It's the colorful stuff, the voices and stuff that they use, and all that other stuff. It's great for that, but I think the fall off is a lot faster now, where, you know, we were enjoying Zelda and all those other games into our teens. I don't think it interests the kids as much anymore that far into it.
Yeah, I still enjoy Zelda. Link Between Worlds was fucking great. Just saying. Yeah, it's interesting how it's going to shake out, and we'll know later in the week what they think they're going to get away with doing. If it's advert games with microtransactions, that could be real interesting, because if they get a taste, the thing I think I worry about if they went to mobiles is I don't think a lot of the types of games they make translate really well to touch controls.
No, like, definitely not.
Like, Mario 3D World is, you know, the 3D Land and 3D World are excellent examples of games that would probably work pretty well for the first half of them, and then all of a sudden, like, the difficulty ramps up incredibly hard. I don't know.
The only game
you played the latter half of, like, the real late levels in 3D World in co-op, but, oh my god, they're just nightmarishly difficult.
The only games I could see them porting over to like the iOS really well, and also like
Pokemans
incorporating microtransaction would be like the WarioWare stuff, like that they could port over easily, and I think they could easily also put in, you know, make it in such a way almost like with Candy Crush or any of those things where it's like you have a microtransaction to get some bonus things for certain stages and levels. That's you know, I think that would be an easy enough win for them, but to do something like that, I think you're right earlier in your point of saying they would rather stop selling games than to go and do something of that nature.
Because if you think about, like, the obvious maneuver would be, okay, let's make an iOS Pokemon and put, like, location-based hunting in it and sell 800 million copies, and it would just print money, something like that. But they're not going to do it because Nintendo doesn't, like, that's not the way they do online. I mean, if you've played Pokemon X and Y,
yeah,
you know, the way the online, like, that's a fully featured online game, and it's still fucking backwards. I don't know if it's just the old guard there still has too much influence, or if, you know, that their developers just don't care, or if they are really trying to safeguard children. I just, benefits of jumping to a platform like that aren't as beneficial to the types of games they make.
Hmm.
We'll see.
Interesting.
We shall see.
We shall see indeed.
Maybe they'll just scrap the Wii U gamepad and sell it as a system with the Pro Controller.
Maybe.
That'd be interesting, just have a little tablet size gaming platform.
Like, support it optionally, but everything else, it just sell it for $250 without the gamepad in it and pack in one of those Pro Controllers and sell it like that. And I think that's also a completely viable solution.
Get the price point down?
Maybe, yeah.
Because if it's a $200 console, because let's face it, it's $200 hardware in there.
Yeah,
totally. It's the gamepad, and the tech that it's involved with that is what drives that hardware price up so far. Don't know. We'll find out.
Anything else to talk about?
And I thought we could talk about Evolve a bit, but
Is that the Total
Rock game?
Yeah,
that was that. You know, all that stuff came out since the last time we podcasted too. But
yeah,
and Nick managed to get the info out of them via their Twitter account that you can in fact play a co-op.
Did some sleuthing.
Yeah, there's actually not that much info in the preview in here. I had read it the other day in the Game Informer article. It does sound pretty interesting, though. Basically, it is a 4-player co-op shooter, but the versus element of it is the one player is going to play this monster that kind of grows over time and is against the players. Like Mike was saying, they did confirm that you don't have to have a player in that role. The AI can take its place, and so
cool.
Yeah. It kind of sounds like now the name just escapes me. There's the Half-Life mod with the
natural selection.
Yeah, a little bit like natural selection. Thank you. But with a bigger scale kind of thing going on.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it sounded kind of like Left 4 Dead 2, Left 4 Dead versus mode, but the one player on the other team plays as the tank the whole time.
Yeah, I guess the person will have some control over spawning some minion type characters and stuff like that there, so it sounds pretty interesting. It's coming later this year, I guess fall. It sounds like awesome. Fall, it sounds like this fall is going to be kind of a busy fall again.
That's big time.
But up until that point, I know Jason kind of had it on the schedule, but up until that point, it's a pretty barren landscape of gaming releases.
So yeah, there's not a ton of stuff, especially
you got a couple February and March, and then it's empty.
It's real interesting. I mean, and there was a lot of stuff that they had lined up initially that then got pushed back.
Yeah.
Like Destiny.
Yeah.
Destiny, Watch Dogs, I mean, yeah. which has the...
And we still don't even know what Watch Dogs multiplayer is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's been interesting with this release of consoles versus the past
couple. Honestly, I'm kind of glad. I've been digging into the backlog, catching up on some stuff, playing a lot of indie things. Like, it makes me happy that I'm not really like foaming at the mouth for something big right now. Like, just gaming the game.
Yeah. And there's not that, like, there's a lack of stuff to play.
No, not at all.
It's just that everyone that adopted the tech early is looking for something to play, especially the people that only have one thing, right?
Yeah.
You know, we're in the fortunate situation of having multiple platforms and PCs and phones to game on, and we can find our fix depending on what we're in the mood for. But really, if you saved up your money or got something for Christmas and you're this kid or whatever, and you're like, oh, I played through everything already. Battlefield's still broken. What am I going to do? Sort of. So, I like this current situation. I'm okay with it. I have a huge backlog, which is my fault and Steam's fault, and I'm okay with that. I can understand if there is frustration, but I'm okay with things being delayed to the fall.
Yeah, as of tomorrow, I will have 4 games sitting in my Steam back. Well, I mean, I'm far more than that, but 4 recent games in my Steam backlog to get through.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, it's, you know, I've had a lot of people ask me, well, which one should I get, Xbox One or PS4? And I'm just like, don't get either of them right now. It's not worth it. You're gonna just, it's gonna sit there after a month.
Yeah. So.
Glorious PC gaming monster race.
That scares people. I've told people that, and they get scared. It's weird.
Yeah, but. It is nice. Like Nick's been saying, I've been kind of backlogging and exploring random stuff. Like something that someone called us out on it during the end of year stuff, and they said, "Why did you guys not even talk about Hammerwatch?" And because that came out, and I think that came out like right when both consoles launched, and it just kind of fell in.
Yeah. I think John reviewed it for the site and gave it a decent review.
It's good, yeah. Man. It's Gauntlet.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is. But, you know, stuff like that I've been poking around at, and I won't talk about it here, but I'm planning on doing something phenomenally stupid with a backlog.
But I cannot wait to hear that conversation.
I'm looking forward to that. I know. You might as well spill it.
It's a teaser for next episode.
Da, da, da.
I know, but it's like I actually packed up my Xbox 360. Like it's in a closet now. Like,
wow.
I haven't played an Xbox 360 game since last August. And you know, the only thing coming out for it that even interests me is Dark Souls 2, which I intend to play that on PC. So why keep the Xbox, you know, hooked up and plugged in, sapping, you know, my power bill with its giant power brick? And other, like, I've been kind of coasting on the PS3, just kind of like seeing what the instant game collection, you know, what they put on PSN for free every month has been pretty nice. Like, they put Brothers on it just recently, and BioShock Infinite, and I checked out, I downloaded it, but I haven't played it yet, but I'm going to check out Dyad, which I know a lot of people thought was pretty fun.
That game's sick!
Yeah, I've just been kind of messing around with that, and a lot of, like, other than PC gaming, like, I've been playing a lot of stuff on the 3DS, and yes, our reader is... Nathan has chimed in and said that Binary Domain is currently free. Everybody needs to get their fix of Big Bow, because that game is actually shockingly good, and I don't know why nobody played it. Probably because Sega is terrible at marketing games that don't have Sonic the Hedgehog on them. But yeah, bad cover art is has some bad cover art for sure. But that game is rad as hell. It's kind of a good time to, you know, be a little casual.
Yeah.
You know.
Cool.
That's all I got.
Anything else? Peanut Gallery?
You're leading the charge here, Jason.
You
can make the decision whether to talk about sales numbers.
I don't care about sales numbers.
Okay, well, you the boss.
You show me something good with sales numbers, something definitive, and I'll talk about sales numbers. But it's one of those no contest kind of things. Anyways, that wraps it up, I think, for episode 119. As always, you can check out our apps on the iOS and Android App Store. Leave feedback for us on iTunes. We always enjoy that. We enjoy even more people who call and leave us voicemails, of which there have been none, so we have not enjoyed anyone.
Actually, I kind of like keeping the
streak.
I think what we should do is try and get people to join us in the Hangout, or, you know, use the Q&A feature and try and encourage that rather than the voicemail number.
Yeah, definitely.
But that's just me.
Definitely. And I admire the fact that someone is able to join in when I have so many problems trying to hang out. This guy just drops right in.
And our guest has actually asked for the voicemail number, so maybe you will be happy soon, Jason.
Oh, voicemail number is 646-926-6748. The first minute is free, but every minute after that, you have to listen to Mike talk about something with Nintendo. it's just the price you pay.
I'd rather talk about Dark Souls, if you know, be completely honest.
Maybe you'll get a nice cheat code tip as well. Locke, oh, for some reason, his mic is cut out, but...
I have the Nintendo Power Top Secret Player's Guide for the NES.
So give us a top secret tip.
Okay, so I just opened up to... You have a choice. Do you want to hear about Super Soccer or Super Tennis?
Super Tennis.
Super Tennis. Holy crap. So... Well, I mean, the passwords are like 100 characters long, so I'm going to talk about how to
read it out.
Pro. So here's a way to make your pro a top contender. Press select to see score and stats. Then on controller 2, key in the following code. RR, left down, BALL, and a plausible sound. Press A or B on controller 1, then change the characters on the screen with the control pad and the X button. It's basically how to enable debug mode.
Nice.
That's pretty rad. If you'd like another one, I can open to another page.
Yeah, go for it. So in addition to that hot tip, you'll also get... Oh, I see the Lone Ranger over there. Oh, nope, there it goes.
Nope. How about... I don't know. Captain Skyhawk.
Yes.
If you would like in-flight invincibility...
Who wouldn't?
You press up, right, down, left, up 4 times, then press start, and you will be invincible.
It's good. It's good. You know, excellent. When you're going really fast up there in the sky and you hit a duck, you don't know what might happen, so it's good to be invincible.
It's very true.
Follow us on Twitter. We are at CoOptimus without the dash. And until next time, Nick, Locke, Mike, thanks again. Have a good week.
Peace.